Hello and welcome to the Metal Hammer podcast number 103.
How did we get here?
Nobody knows.
Letting the days go by.
As you can tell from this existential conversation, I'm here with Jonathan Seltzer, Metal Hammer's reviews editor. How are you?
I'm very good.
Good. And I'm Eleanor Goodman, deputy editor of Metal Hammer. And we are here to bring you another amazing podcast, this time with added black metal and gloom and existential crises.
Yes, because I'm all about all of those. And cheesy rock, which we shall get into later.
So much cheesy rock. But that's a conversation for down the line.
Yes.
Right now, we've been talking about our 80s issue, which is still on sale now. It comes with a special Carpenter Brute CD curated by the synthwave master himself. And it comes with an 80s poster pack,
which I'm very happy with because it has a Godflesh Street Cleaner poster.
Amazing.
One of my favourite album covers and one of my favourite records of all time. So I was very happy with that. It's going up on my wall as soon as I can find some space.
Excellent. Please put it next to your bed so you can look at it every morning when you wake up and think of Godflesh.
Grim industrial people being people being crucified against walls of fire.
Exactly that.
Good way to wake up.
Exactly that. The issue also features Iron Maiden, Anvil, Discharge, Morbid Angel, Manowar, Black Sabbath, Holy Moses, Metallica, Doro, Queensryche, lots and lots and lots of 80s amazingness.
Ministry.
So, yeah.
For my industrial piece.
Yeah, so go grab that 80s issue out right now. Should we move on to some news?
Let's do that.
News. Well, the big story this week is that Ozzy Osbourne has cancelled his 2020 North American tour due to health issues.
Yeah, it's not surprising. Still disappointing. Bit sad.
It's really, like you said, it's really sad and disappointing because I think the singles he's been putting out recently have been really good.
Yeah.
And obviously it's been over the news quite recently about his Parkinson's diagnosis. And he's been struggling with that for a number of years. So, who knows what's going on with them at the moment. We can just have to cross our fingers, really, and hope.
Yeah, he put out a statement that there was some treatment that he needed. Was it in Switzerland, I think?
Yeah, he's going for some specialist treatment. That's right, yeah.
And that was going to, impinge on the North American tour.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just that, when concerts, when tours are being put back and then put back, it kind of raises the stakes for when they do actually happen.
Mm.
And so I think, by the time he does get around to playing shows, everyone's going to be wondering, there's going to be this kind of trepidation in the air, I think.
Yeah, totally.
About how well he's going to be.
Well, you're right. He's gone to Switzerland for treatment, or he's going to Switzerland for treatment, so hence the cancellation. And he spoke to the Los Angeles Times. He said that he was 75% back to normal after his health woes in 2019. And he said, it's been a pretty incredible, interesting career. People have written me off time and time again, but I kept coming back and I'm going to come back from this. When, I don't know. I don't want to go back out there until I'm ready. So we just have to wait, really, don't we?
Yep.
All the best wishes to Ozzy.
Yeah, we wish him well.
Yeah. What else is happening?
Well, Rage Against the Machine. There's a bit of a brouhaha.
Isn't there? No, I heard that word in a while.
I love that word. over the ticket prices at their gigs.
Yeah, so basically people were kicking off, weren't they, on Twitter about ticket prices. But actually they've done something where they sold a proportion of the tickets at the normal price. And then I think, is it 10% of the tickets they held back and artificially inflated with the extra revenue going to charities. And this was to try and hold off scalpers reselling the tickets for a higher price. I think that's correct. It's a bit of a thorny involved story, isn't it?
Yeah, they've been talking about fighting against scalpers, which is an issue for any gig goer.
Such an issue.
I think we've talked about it in the past, but it's just why we can't have nice things.
It really sucks. It's like you said, why we can't have nice things. The ticket problem is really widespread. Scalpers, it's an issue here and overseas. And every now and then it looks like something might be done or there might be some kind of inquiry. And I think in the UK there's been an inquiry into it, but I'm not sure where it's got to yet.
Well, I have full faith in the Boris Johnson regime to tackle this as a matter of priority.
But this is in the North America, but yeah, I mean, it looks like Rage have been really trying to actually work with the system they've got and try and do something within these limits and made money for charity. But a lot of people have gone online saying the ticket prices were too high and they can't get one, and there's been a lot of upset. So we just have to see where things go, really. How other bands are going to deal with it too.
You know, because of what they've, you know, traditionally stood for.
Of course, yeah.
And they think that, you know, this is kind of, it's capitalism gone mad, I tell you.
Yeah.
And then there's also the sort of, you know, there's a lot of discussion about them playing Reading and Leeds rather than, say, Download or any other metal festival.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it seems like half the people in the audience don't know who Rage Against the Machine are.
Yeah, we had a chat about that last week because me and Merlin were talking about the brouhaha on Twitter and how people had called Rage Against the Machine goths. It's like, where did that come from?
Yeah, I just think, you know, there's a generation of people who just don't know anything more than a decade old.
Of course, and I was the same when I was younger. I don't think you can fault people for that at all, by any means, but maybe it's a strange audience to go
for. Yeah, well, it's just that you look at the Reading Festival now, or the lineup now, and you probably hadn't heard of many of the bands 3 or 4 years ago, and you probably won't have heard many of the bands 3 or 4 years in the future. It just seems to be that in that kind of indie world, there seems to be much more of a turnover of bands than there is in the metal world. So that kind of keeps you in a constant present tense, that you don't have a sense of history, you know, where things come from, things have a lineage, and everything's kind of here today. It seems to be a little bit of, everything's a bit ephemeral, here today, gone tomorrow. So I'm not surprised that if that's your bag, then you're not going to have any sense of, like, history or know what actually impacted your world 10 years ago, what impacted Reading Festival.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, like the Reading and the Leeds festivals, they're not like famous sites in the way that Donington is. So, you know, the fact that Download has, you know, this historical site helps keep that sense of lineage alive in the way that maybe Leeds and Reading doesn't. And, you know, the lineups these days are very different from when I used to go back in my old Melody Maker days.
I actually do think Reading and Leeds have, like, a brand and a history, as it were, having grown up with them. But
they don't seem to remember it.
I was going to say it's certainly not a genre-bounded one. It's a festival that's always changed to cater to what quote-unquote young people are into, not a specific genre, whereas Download and Monsters of Rock has always been metal and rock-focused, so there's definitely a different thing there. But yeah, I mean, the ticketing thing, it does seem like they've tried to do the right thing within the confines of what they've got, but I totally agree with you about having seen all the backlash, because if they're a band who are talking about sort of breaking down barriers and everybody having access to the same things and lots of social issues, but then you can only guarantee the band if you have a certain amount of money, there's a disconnect there, whether or not it's intentional.
Mm. Maybe they're going to do some like guerrilla gigs like Metallica did.
Yeah, and you know when they did Prince of Pop, that was amazing.
Yeah.
They did the free gig to celebrate getting the number one. I was at that show and that was incredible. So I think you'd be hard pushed to say they're money grabbers. But, you know,
no,
the ticketing thing's just an issue across the board, really, isn't it?
But the other thing is, like if people don't know who Rage Against the Machine are, you know, you must remember that Christmas number one a few years back. You know, it was such big news everywhere.
Yeah, was in the UK as well. The ticketing thing is happening in the States, but Reading and Leeds is obviously UK-based, and the number one was in the UK as well. It's probably longer ago than we think it was, though.
Yeah.
Anyway, Rage are playing. I'm looking forward to seeing them in August. So that's the thing.
I'll be arranged to see how how they go down in front of a disinterested crowd. See how Killing in the Name of works.
Mm. Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
We've got some new songs out this week.
Yes.
So on Friday, that was the Day of Love. Last Friday, it was Valentine's Day. A Machine Head released an anti-Valentine's Day song called Circle the Drain. And Rob Flynn said it was based on an acquaintance of his who came home from fighting in Afghanistan only to have his relationship fall apart. So it's quite a serious subject.
A serious subject, yes.
It is. But the way you said that implied, I don't think it's a serious song.
Well, okay. Well, sadly, first of all, it's not a cover of the Katy Perry Circle in the Drain.
It's not.
Thankfully,
that's immediately that came to mind when I heard it was called Circle the
Thankfully,
Drain.
Thankfully,
well.
It's not a cover of the 36 Crazy Fists song called Circling the Drain.
No, it's not.
But it is a very Machine Head song. Very old school Machine Head song.
It's so old school Machine Head, but it reminded me, I like it because it reminded me straight off of Triple Beam from Catharsis. And I know like 90% of people hate it on Catharsis, but I really liked it and I still stand by that.
I just
I know you're not into it at all, really, are you?
Not really. No, it's just, for me, it's just that kind of meathead metal that I never really kind of got into. That kind of post-Pantera sort of sense of entitlement, usually in regards to women. It just reminds me of bad nights at the Intrepid Fox in London. Or, you know, I used to go to this one club for Halloween, and you know, 2 o'clock they just put on all the Pantera and all that kind of stuff, and there'd just be loads of guys just like chest beating and at 2 a.m, and it just reminds me that it's just fodder for them. The lyrics are kind of suspect too, even despite the subject matter.
In what way?
Well, so it starts off like kind of a bit of self pity. Like it starts saying, "I need to start running away. We're no good.
It's and me. Then, and I'm then, trying to save."
Yeah, and then it just escalates really quickly into "get the fuck away from me."
It does, yeah.
And it's just like, well, she's better off without you if you're that changeable. And so I don't
to
know,
be fair, she's cheated on him, so it's probably going through a cycle of like anger.
So yeah, first of all, it starts. So
I'm not taking sides here.
No,
it says
like he's alone in bed thinking, "get the fuck away from me," and so he's thinking that, and then it just goes to like just straightforward. "Get the fuck away from me." So he's thinking it, and then he's kind of like pretty much more saying it.
And then, hang on, I'm just getting this straight. Then I can almost clear my head till I'm alone laying in bed thinking, "get the fuck away from me." So she's not in bed with him. He's alone in bed.
Yes, he's thinking that.
Yeah. "I need to start running away. We're no good. It's me I'm trying to save. Treading water, we're just numbing the pain, spinning around as we circle the drain. Pick up the pieces and turn it around. I bring the hammer down." So he's smashing up the relationship. They're always saying they're picking up the pieces and then he's smashing it again.
But the way he sings, like, you know, "get the fuck away from me," it's kind of like just if some guy tried to start a fight with you or something. You know, it's a bit unseemly.
All I do is remember last September. I feel like it's rhymed "remember" in September before. I might be wrong there.
Yeah, yeah, but he's singing it with a, you know, with a certain kind of you know, real kind of viciousness. In it,
yeah,
and I don't know if it's not necessarily toxic masculinity, but it's it'll leave your stomach feeling a bit uncomfortable.
I mean, I guess it's the visceral reaction to being cheated on is what he's thinking about. It's not like being violent specifically towards somebody.
But,
it's like there's not a lot of nuance going on. Basically,
no,
it's
a lot of self pity.
Yeah,
but so I've had this discussions like, you know what. One of the albums I'm kind of most fascinated with is Type A Negative, Slow, Deep and Hard.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a deeply angry, vicious breakup album.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, on the surface of it, it's really misogynistic. But there's a kind of a self-awareness in that I don't feel that's in here. And so when I try to explain why I like it as an album, Slow, Deep and Hard, because I say it's not really an album about women, it's an album about men, and it's him like basically what you know detailing his kind of the breakdown of his masculinity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a really fascinating sort of paradigm in there, just like, you know, he's like this guy, 6'7", he wants to be this absolute man, and if you're that absolute about everything, all it takes is like one little brick in the wall and your whole edifice starts falling down. And so this kind of details that in so much detail. And so it's a really good, that album is a really good breakdown of masculinity. There was around about the same time, there was River Runs Red by...
Life of Agony.
Life of Agony. And that was also another like really interesting, where it went beyond self-pity into like kind of being aware of... you know, your own kind of masculinity and the own toxicity. Sometimes that is in that. And another album around about the same time called Gentlemen But Afghan Wigs was also a really great breakdown. But what that awareness that those albums have, this one doesn't. This song doesn't.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue against that. You put forward a really good argument. I don't have a lot to say about it. I just kind of went, yeah, that's a Machine Head banger. it doesn't really it doesn't stand up to scrutiny lyrically, I'll give you that, but as like a just an old school, this sounds like Machine Head sort of song, that's what it is.
It just falls into that kind of churning meathead metal pit that I don't know. It's not my idea. It's not what I like listening to metal for.
It does seem like they've gone down a simplified route recently with this, with Catharsis.
In terms of
subject matter of the songs,
yeah.
They're just kind of more straight up relationships, drugs. There's not a lot left to the imagination of the lyrics.
Yeah, I mean, my immediate reaction was, okay, it's a bit more disciplined than that last album, which was all over the place. Needed a producer who's just like, right, stop this.
I mean, yeah, there are a lot of songs on there, but I just thought it was quite fun. It was sort of like cutting loose and just being a bit old school and sort of freewheeling, and that's why I kind of enjoyed it. I didn't really need it to be massively coherent. I just kind of went, yeah, this is like a fun thing to do, but it wasn't exactly like a carefully curated conceptual masterpiece.
No, even when he turns into Flogging Molly.
I hate that bit. Bastards. No, I really hate that one.
Yeah, I think we used to
play... That was like the low point.
I think we used to play in the office when it came out quite a lot.
Yeah,
I think
did,
it's because
yeah.
we were actually really willing it to be good. You have to keep playing it again. Let it be good, let it be good. If I play enough times, it'll be good.
No, I didn't like that particular song, but I did like the rest of them. I love Triple Beam, I love Catharsis, because like I said, I just like that sort of free feeling, but... Yeah, I don't know. We'll have to see what happens, whether they're going to carry on sort of down this like straightforward, straight up 90s-esque simple kind of route, or if it's going to turn into something more intricate.
Usually when people have done either like an ambitious or in their case a sprawling record, they tend to react the next time round and do something much more stripped down.
I don't know. This single suggests to me it will carry on down the Catharsis path, but who knows?
Yeah.
I'm curious to find out.
I'm not, but I will find out anyway.
Asking Alexandria have got a new song as well. It's called They Don't Want What We Want. And first song in a while, I think. I'm trying to remember when their last record was. Just have a quick look, because you won't know, will you, Jonathan?
No, I only have a certain amount of bandwidth.
You have to use that bandwidth for darker matters.
Yes.
Well, what did you think of the song?
Not as bad as I feared.
Wait, yeah, it's been 3 years since the last record.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound like they've gone through any kind of real self-reflection or anything about what... It's free of the worst parts Asking Alexandria.
I actually thought it was very different, because they've traditionally just sort of written about relationships and stuff, or written about falling out with each other. But this song, it's like they've tried to go political. Like, the lyrics are things like, the more they take from us, the better they will be, or something. I can't remember now. Yeah, like, the more they take from us, the better we'll be. As if they're talking about politicians who are taking stuff from sort of the underclass of society and just going, yeah, it's fine, you'll be better off, we'll just keep taking the stuff. Like, it seemed to me to be a political comment on what's happening in the US and the UK. They're obviously a UK band who have been often based in the US. And I was like, oh, they've, you know, sort of in quotation marks, grown up. It's like they've suddenly decided to tackle something outside of themselves, which I thought was showed a bit of growth, to be honest with you.
Yeah, but they still sing like they're just about only just hit puberty.
Well, that's the other thing, actually. I thought it sounded really like Fall Out Boy. I thought his style of singing was actually quite different on this record. I think it's quite a big change to them, is what I'm saying. I'm not necessarily saying, like, it's for the better or for the worse. I just thought it was quite different.
So I think it's very professionally put together, the song.
They're always very slick, aren't they?
Yeah. It doesn't have all the sort of extra electronic nuts and bells and whistles. It doesn't sound quite as desperate as maybe as I've thought they've sounded in the past.
Yeah.
It seems a bit... slightly more stripped down. Maybe because of the subject matter, which I'm sure will clarify... the current world problems for a lot of people.
I know what you mean about this sort of desperation, because I felt like the last record, the self-titled one, I wasn't really too fussed on it, and I felt it was sort of like trying to capture something that wasn't quite there.
There's a lot of bands that just seem to like chuck shit at a wall and see what sticks.
But I do think they've sort of tried to do something different with this, and I quite like the video as well. They've got loads of medieval paintings.
It's a look video. So
illustrated.
It's
but I thought it was quite cool, because one of my favourite memes is like the why though meme. So I was like, oh, it's like all the medieval memes put together.
Yeah, I actually sometimes like lyric videos more than actual videos because they have really good animation sometimes.
Yeah.
And I like what they do with what people try to do with typography.
Yeah, and I think they've tried to sort of link that whole medieval painting to like the political system as it is today and how it's sort of, this might be a link too far, but you know, the sort of medieval feudal thing of certain concentrated people having power and money and other people not having the power and the money. And it does seem like they've gone political. I don't know whether it's because, you know, like Ben is a dad or something. Who knows? Maybe he's thinking about his kid's future.
Maybe it's because things are really shit and you just can't ignore them anymore.
I mean, there is that, yeah. Not even asking Alexandria. You know, they can't just sing about coke and inter-band disputes now. They've got to sing about the state of the world.
Yeah, it's interesting that a band have traditionally been about that. Feel the need now to sometimes, you know, when a band goes from not very political to being very political, like a good case and example was sometimes it's just like when bands kind of suddenly change their tack and you can see the strain of them trying to say something relevant.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Like I think like there's one Municipal Waste record where, like, you know, they've always sung about beer kegs and zombies and all the good thrash stuff, and they try to go political, and it was just, oh my god, another song about evangelists, and
right,
it was just
a bit much.
Yeah, just not very convincing. And
some bands are better when they stick to partying. Like they're just a band I always think of, like, have a beer, have a barbecue, have a party. I sort of don't need them to be political. Do you know what I mean?
I think thrash is inherently political.
Oh yeah, of course. I mean, and we've had this conversation before.
Yeah, but it's just if we're going down the big kegs and zombies route, and then you suddenly go political, it just looks a bit contrived.
Yeah, I think different thrash bands for different things.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit of an office quote there. If Merlin was here, he'd be like, different thrash bands for different needs.
Yeah, I just like ones that sing about the apocalypse and nuclear war, because that's what it all comes down.
That's your fave.
Yeah.
Well, we mentioned Ozzy earlier, but we should also probably mention we celebrated 50 years of Black Sabbath's debut album.
Yes.
That was last Thursday, I want to say. 50 years of Black Sabbath.
Time flies.
Doesn't it? So you were like just born when this happened, right?
Yeah, I was maybe a few weeks old.
This was the world that you were born into.
I know. It's like obelisks falling into the the pot of magic potion when he's a kid.
Please say that description again. That was amazing. It's like obelisks falling into the magic potion when you're a kid. Obsidian obelisks.
No, from Asterix and Obelix. The comic books about the Gaul. About the Gaul. Asterix the Gaul.
I thought you were talking
about...
So
Obelisk, you know, he's a big one. He doesn't need any magic potion because he fell into a vat of it as a kid. So he's just always strong.
I thought you were talking about, like, the monuments, like Obelisks.
I was talking about the French band Dessiné.
So cultured.
Every kid around my age was obsessed with Asterix and Obelisk.
I did have a book, but I didn't really ever read them.
Oh, they were great. I was just...
That's why I turned out like this and you turned out to be...
into Vikings. And
intellectual.
Yeah, because of cartoons. And just being super happy when used to get little toys in cereal boxes.
I know, I got those.
But yeah, obviously. The Asterix and Obelisk ones were my favourites.
No, I didn't get them. I just got like Spooky Dokies and things. Bit off topic. Where were we? Black Sabbath turned 50.
Yeah,
that's good, isn't it?
Yeah, look, every time I play it, I get the same reaction, just the immediate sort of wow, and just the effect of it never wears off. I think maybe it's because it's been what they did has been picked up so much that it always feels current.
Yes,
I think, you know, one of the other aspects about it was that yeah, it was like a kind of a year zero, but. The bands that really, you know, what it tells you is that the bands that really changed everything, they also had deep, they still had deep roots in what went before.
Mm.
Like, you can hear still a lot of kind of blues noodling in it, especially in Sleeping Village. And you can totally see where they come from, but it's just, there's just these magic moments where something mutates into something else, but it always has deep roots in, you know, it's not just like putting something new in for the sake of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, Things don't mutate unless they have like a really deep strain in them. And so yeah, it was kind of like yeah, total sea change. But they had, you know, but they were kind of blues guys as well too.
It's heavy as well, isn't it? Like I mean, it's still heavy.
I just try to imagine the shock of hearing Black Sabbath for the first time then in 1970.
Pretty cool. So yeah, go have a little bit of birthday cake or something and put that out in the dark and have a nice time.
Yeah, I also just want to. Yeah, also just you know, it totally like mixed these elements of like horror and total social awareness as well too. You know, that just that, you know, just the existential horror of the first opening lines, but it was so tied into, you know, the kind of their Birmingham, kind of downtrodden roots. And the thing is, like, those are like the genes that metal's always mixed, that kind of horror, fantasy, you know, the mundane as well. And it just creates this amazing concoction that's like DNA churning soup. That's it's not just in the downtuned riffs, but just some of those themes that have like been churned and reconfigured ever since.
And the themes that people of us who like metal are so inexorably drawn to.
Yes.
But why?
Yeah.
We just are.
It's in our genes.
It's yeah. Oh, it's all gone heavy.
Yeah.
Let's go on to another subject. This is definitely not heavy.
Of contrast. Yeah.
Because Jonathan is here this week, we've chosen a very special album of the week.
Yeah.
And our album of the week is Heat 2 by the band Heat.
Yeah.
Jonathan, go on. No, primer for everybody who Heat are.
No, I kind of want to hear what your thoughts are on it, because my experience with Heat is gauging other, like, as much as my personal love of the band, and I'll explain why I love them, but it's also tied in with what other people's responses are to them.
I just think it's cheesy as fuck.
Yeah.
It's like you put it on and you're like, they're really doing this? Oh, yeah, they're really doing this.
Exactly.
They're really writing like these cheesy songs about like the opening track is called Rock Your Body.
Yeah.
They've got a song called We Are Gods. And it's like cheesy 80s guitar, like. What, like melodic rock solo-y guitar, cheese ball.
Maybe sort of REO Speedwagon in there or something, just so
like,
but by young kids.
Yeah.
Young Swedish kids.
So tell us about where they came from. They formed in 2007. They're from Sweden.
Yeah, I only kind of really came to them on their third album. And I don't know, but like you listen to this one, it's just the immediate feeling of just like being massively injected with this adrenaline shot of happiness. This kind of massive shot of like happy cheesy goo.
I mean, it is happy cheesy
it's
goo.
Just, like it's so like it's so shameless.
That's exactly what it is. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah, again, because you know you're more intellectual than me. You've come up with the right word. It's totally shameless. It's like you don't write songs like this with any kind of
self-consciousness.
Yeah, exactly. You're not being held back whatsoever. You're just like, no, we're just going to write these like cheesy songs and just do it really openly and like not give
a
shit.
But they write such great tunes.
It's very catchy.
At least on a level with Steel Panther. Not the same.
I was actually about to bring Steel Panther up because they sound like a Swedish Steel Panther, but for real, the lyrics obviously aren't about sex in the way that
they are. I mean,
in the way that Steel Panther is not about hookers.
Yeah, thing is, like, there's nothing meta about. They actually have no inner voice.
No,
and
that's exactly right. There's no inner voice. It's completely shameless.
But they really polarize people. So I remember we played them in the office back in Angel, and me and Dom. Like the crusty curmudgeons. We love this pure, unfiltered cheese thing. Everyone else in the office absolutely hated it. It was like, what is this shit? Turn it off. Even Sean Pattenden, even Sean Llewellyn.
She's an editor of Classic Rock.
Classic Rock, yeah. And she loves Heart, but she does not love Heat. And
what a difference one letter can make.
Yeah, but so I can't understand. So for me, it's so immediate and obvious why this band is so great. And it amazes me that other people get such reaction against it. And so I try to come up with an analogy about, work out why people hated it so much. And the only analogy I could come up with was, it's like, let's just say if you were like a cocaine user.
Yes.
Right?
As, you know, obviously let's all
just,
those
let's
times.
Just, let's just say, not you personally. But you know, if you're doing cocaine, it's all the cocaine you've done been doing has been cut with something, so it's been adulterated.
Yeah.
And then someone, that's what you do, and then someone gives you this, like, pure unfiltered cocaine, you just go, it's like, fucking hell! It's like, what the fuck is this shit? Well, that's the pure stuff. And it's just like, that's the feeling of heat. And I've seen them live, and it's just every bit is cheesy. I remember I was at Download, and I was having a really shit time. It was like, I was covering for Classic Rock, and it was raining, it was muddy. I had to go and see Disturbed in the rain.
I would have loved that, Jonathan.
Oh God, Disturbed. That set was like someone had just taken Tool, wrung out all the good stuff, and just held on to the rag.
If I'd been at that festival, I would have gone and reviewed them for you. In fact, I was at that festival. I just wasn't working for Hammond.
I was in the middle of a field in the rain having a shit time. Then I went up. Then I had to like trudge up the hill to go and see cover Black Veil Brides. Just
again, one of your favourite bands.
Oh, just risible is the word for them. Just, and there's two things that saved me. Like one, like on that same stage, the Cult coming on, and it's just like, see, writing a killer riff is not rocket science. Just write a fucking riff. And then going down to the third tent to see Heat, and just these guys just loving every single moment of it. And just being so in the moment. And so for me, it's just like the most uncynical record, one of the most uncynical bands around. And just need a bit of that. They're
sort of like Airbook. What Airborne are to AC/DC, that sort of heat to someone else. I can't think which band, but...
But
it's like, this, like you said, they're young guys and they're doing like an old style of music and sort of, it's not really being given a new spin. They're just doing an old style of music, but with like new production.
But if you write songs that well and throw yourself into it so much, it feels like something new.
It's not meant to be a criticism. It's just, it sort of reminds me of that thing. Like Airborne came along and it's like, oh, they're AC/DC, but like again. And it's almost like Heat are that kind of band, like young guys doing something for fun.
Yeah.
That is like a very classic style of music.
Yeah. Bands are clearly just trying to chase a dream and play this music because they think that's how it's supposed to be played. They're the one who kind of makes it feel a bit old, but this just makes it feel like absolutely brand new and revelatory all over again. Just don't go. It's like I love that bit in the middle of the first song, Rock Your Body, where he just goes, you know, as if he's on stage, looking good. And just all the pull down, just all the reasons for pull downs you ever want. The previous album I thought was a little bit lacking in that kind of in all the thrills that they normally had. I'd just like to point out this isn't actually their second album, even though it's called Heat 2.
It's confusing.
It's their sixth, but the first album is called Heat, but they had a different singer then, and this guy Eric Gronrod, I think he's a better singer, just goes for it a bit more.
So I'm picturing you in your bedroom with your Godflesh poster up, running around the room with singing into a hairbrush.
Yeah, doing the pull downs.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
The finger swipes.
Or dropping to your knee maybe as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, bit of that.
I saw him live and he was like at the Islington Academy. It's funny, like they recorded a previous gig, live album at the Islington Academy, and I was there. And I know that the crowd on the album was not as loud as a crowd. You know, it was louder than the crowd at the actual gig.
Like, which actually, one was louder, the audience or the recorded one? I'm confused now.
Funny you should say this.
Which one was louder?
It was obviously that the crowd on the album wasn't necessarily the crowd at the gig.
Right.
But funny you should mention Godflesh, because I had a choice that night, like whether to see Godflesh or Heat.
I mean, that's like your worst decision that you have to make.
I think I'm the only person on the planet who probably have this decision. But they're playing the same night, and literally one down the road from each other, Godflesh were playing at the garage in Highbury Corner, and he was playing up the road at the Islington Academy. And I love Godflesh. You know, I was born in Godflesh, reborn in Godflesh, and there were all those fires on the album. But I've seen it loads of times. I thought, right, I'm going to go and see Heat. And I was happy that I did.
I'm glad. It was a good day to be you.
Yeah.
And with this record, they'll probably tour again.
I very much hope so.
You'll get to see them again.
And they'll be a great festival band.
Should I come with you and watch
them? Yeah, yeah. We'll do pull downs together.
Well, there you go. That is our album of the week. That is Heat 2 by Heat. Actually, their seventh album, did you say?
Sixth album. Maybe it's a seventh album.
You could look that up for yourselves.
Yeah.
Heat 2 by Heat. Also out, we have The Amity Affliction, Everyone Loves You Once You Leave Them. New record from Anvil. Lowrider, Polaris, We Sell the Dead.
Satanalia Temple.
Mondo Generator.
Yeah, a lot of kind of bands coming back. Like Mondo Generator haven't been around in a while.
No, that was like a blast from the past. But that's actually like a collection of older songs, isn't it? I think this one's Shooter's Bible.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They do actually have a new album called, I think it's called Get Fucked.
All right.
Which is very Mondo Generator.
Yes, very yeah.
Olivieri. Lowrider, the first album in about 20 years. Like one of the classic desert rock bands. The album's really good, actually. Yeah, Saturnalia Temple, kind of occult doom.
Mm-hmm. We Sell the Dead has an ex member of Him.
Yeah, it's have you heard it?
I've heard the last one, but not the new one.
Oh, that's all right. I haven't played it enough. Anvil probably being Anvil.
Anvil, yep. Yeah. Anvil do what Anvil do.
Yeah.
Anyway, lots of good music for your Friday, which is
all
your
today.
Apart from Heat, what is your favourite one?
Probably. Lowrider. I feel like I always want to like Saturnalia Temple more than I do.
Interesting.
Yeah. But yeah, the Lowrider just yeah, it just reminds me of all the classic desert rock stuff, and they haven't lost anything in all the years that they
I just love all the desert rock stuff, and I love all the stories about them having generator passes in the desert, and I always think how amazing would that be to just have been there at that time, just in the desert at a generator party. Like, that's like the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, I think Lowrider is Swedish, so not much in the way of deserts there.
But, you know, the other stuff, the Nick Oliveri stuff you're mentioning, they were in the desert.
Yeah, they were, yeah. In shootouts and things. Wasn't Nick Oliveri involved in a shootout?
I don't know. We'll have to run that by our legal team. Yeah. Should we do some reader questions?
Yes.
Yeah. Rob Lake asks, who would the Metal Hammer team want to either re-release a classic album or release a greatest hits compilation? He also says, Happy Holidays, Mr. Wizard, which I think is a reference to Merlin being away today. But I'm not sure Merlin likes to go by Mr. Wizard, so should probably gloss over that one.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, who do you want to really release a classic album or release a greatest hits compilation, Jonathan?
Well, I think pretty much every metal album gets re-released anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go for an album that kind of touches on metal, that did something very different with metal, which would be the Young Gods debut album.
Nice.
Called The Young Gods. And I bet if it came out now and you listen to it now, you would not believe that it would be like 30 years old.
I don't know anything about it.
I played some in the office to you, some later stuff of theirs in the office to you.
Right, and you I remember loved that. It. I said it was very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
So they were a Swiss band. They sampled metal and classical music and created something entirely new out of it. Just kind of like total convulsive pagan classical landscape, and it was so revolutionary that no one else, I think only one band ever thought they could try to copy them, and didn't do a particularly good job. They did an okay job. They built called Troponin Pal, but it was so revolutionary what they did, and the effect of it was so. It was just like standing in the middle, in the epicenter of this kind of massive eruption, and someone's conducting this eruption around you.
Oh, wow.
So it's like, you know, kind of used technology, but it was like super pagan. They had this guy, Franz Trachter, the voice was like, imagine sort of Jim Morrison, who'd just been in the year 2020 BC or something. But he had this amazingly rich voice, and it was just one of the most startling debut albums I've ever heard. And
we should all go and visit that then.
Yeah, so I just think,
what was it called again?
The Young Gods.
Oh, it was self-titled.
Yeah, it was self-titled. And I think it came out in 88, I think it came out.
And I do remember you putting something on for me and really liking it.
More electronic albums.
I think I went to follow them on Spotify could.
Yeah, and maybe TV Sky, which is kind of their mid-period when they went a bit more rocky.
Here we go.
But the first two albums, they kind of mixed classical.
I did. I followed them.
Yeah, the first two albums, they mixed classical and you know, lots. They sampled like Voivod and a lot of other kind of metal riffs, and they'd loop them, and they just find this exponential amount of energy in these riffs, the way they would use them. So they had no guitarist, but they had a live drummer and a sampler. And yeah, it's one of the most explosive, just like all things are possible debut albums. And
amazing.
I just think it should be thrown into our midst again. To it won't 30 years later down the line, it doesn't sound dated.
So
it'll sound as revolutionary now as it is.
So it's 1987. Looks like. Yeah. That's very cool. I'm glad you flagged them again, because now I've remembered them.
There's something like super shamanic about them as well. They played the Garage a few months ago, end of last year, and it's what they do now. It's very different, kind of slightly more ambient, but it just the way it just builds and rises and it takes you out of yourself. But this was just it's just like the earth crust opening up and being directed by some crazed wizard who actually knows what he's doing.
I mean, that sounds pretty mad.
Yeah. So I just think that should be reissued and it will just blow everyone's minds.
Well, I was going to say something a bit less mad than that. I was just going to say it would be nice to see like a Hybrid Theory re-release, because it's 20 years of Hybrid Theory this year, but like with old photos and like interview bits and pieces like from the past repackaged and kind of, that whole... Because re-releases, fine. Like it's like you said about the Young Gods one, that could actually sort of come into people's consciousness, like it crossed people's radars because it was released such a long time ago. Hybrid Theory is 20 years now, which is pretty crazy because obviously there were people in their 20s and teens and younger who've not heard it, but I just kind of, it would be nice. I love that album so much and it was so pivotal for me. And obviously, you know, we've lost Chester and it would be nice to just have like a sort of tribute edition of that with extra stuff in. I'd like to see that.
Like sort of like demos and...
Yeah, all that, like outtakes and interviews and just all that extra kind of bonus stuff, because obviously I've listened to the record a million times, so it's not really about hearing the actual tracks again so much as being immersed in some of the stuff around it. I quite like that.
Maybe the reason they aren't releasing it because they don't want to be seen as capitalising on...
Totally. I mean, there's a ton of albums that are 20 this year, and any of them I'd love as well, you know, White Pony and Disturbs the Sickness. Said that one for you. We've got another question. You can do this one, Jonathan.
Okay, so Sam Welch asks, with Floor from Nightwish and Hannes from Sabaton, both now having headlined Wembley Arena, what are the other power couples in metal?
Well, I don't actually know a bunch of power couples in metal. I mean, a bunch of couples in metal, because I think people tend to keep the relationships on the down low. But Doyle from Misfits and Alyssa Whiteglues, I'd say, were a power couple in the sense that they are both very vocal about the fact that they're vegan and gym going, and they're both pretty stacked. So I'd say they're a literal power couple who do powerlifting. That'd be the one I'd pick.
Yeah, if you're vegan, it's probably, if you went out with a carnivore, it'd be difficult.
Probably, yeah. I mean, I'm sure people can manage it, but they're both very staunchly vegan and, work out a lot, seemingly. So that's my pick. Have you got one?
This guy called Ozzy, this woman called Sharon.
Oh, yeah, I might have heard of them.
Sharon Den Adele and her husband in the band.
Yeah, that was quite interesting, actually, wasn't it? Because he stepped aside and stopped being part of the touring band so he could care for their children while she went on tour. And I thought that was really interesting, because usually you get it the other way around in sort of conventional lifestyles. It usually ends up being the man who carries on doing the job and the woman who looks after the kids. And obviously he's still very involved with the band in terms of composition and organisation and so on. But I thought that was quite an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah. The only novel I come up with was Liv Christine of Leaves Eyes and Alex Kroll of Atrocity.
There you go.
So, bestriding the worlds of metal together.
What better way?
orchestral and death metal behemoths they are.
What better way to bestride something? Matt Heeks asks, what things do you not like about your favourite bands? I personally don't like it when Ivan Moody does a speaking bit before the solos in Five Finger Death Punch songs, when they say stupid things. So Matt Heeks doesn't like the chat at a Five Finger Death Punch gig. He just wants them to get on with playing the songs, it sounds like. Are there any things you don't like? about your favourite bands?
I've had some, two of my favourite bands or the singers turn out to have either right-wing, extreme right-wing views.
That sucks, doesn't it?
Or, you know, people you wouldn't expect, or to, or to kind of try to authenticate people with extremely dodgy views. So, yeah. Without going in too much in the details, but you know, I was like, Amoebics is one of my favourite all-time bands, and just such an uplifting band. And then, yeah, the singer Rob Barron, when he, you know, he had a new band called Tower Cross, and one of the people on his thank you lists and on this album that was due to come out was cited allegedly as being a Holocaust denier.
Right.
As the album will never probably never come out.
Mm-hmm.
There's a band called Skullflower who are like one of the greatest noise power electronics band in the world, and they just have something that no other band has, and it's just, for me, it's the absolute music of the spheres. And the guy who actually ended up just being Skullflower started coming out with some extremely right-wing views. And I don't know if it's something that happens at a certain age.
It's just horrible whenever it happens.
Yeah.
So it's horrible for when anybody says anything like that. It's just...
Yeah, and how do you reassess their work and, you know...
Yeah, sure. I mean,
yeah, but you know, I'm still going to listen to Skullflower records, and I'm still going to listen to Amoebics records.
I think,
but just yeah, with Rob Barron, there's something always. I had a sense of nobility about him, always, and you know, he made us a sword.
Well, I mean, actually, I should say on Matt Heeks' question, I actually read it out a bit incorrectly. He said he doesn't like it when Ivan Moody does a speaking bit for the solos in Death Punch songs. And I added the bit when they say stupid things, because that was my note and I'm dippy and I forgot. And that was basically my point agreeing with you, is I don't like it when my favourite bands say stupid things, like when they say things that are racist or sexist or homophobic. I can't think of any examples. I think luckily a lot of the bands I like haven't particularly come out and said anything terrible, but every now and then you get something and it just makes you really uncomfortable and you're just like, I wish that wouldn't be a thing. And also, I guess, much more trivially, if we're talking specific examples of stuff you don't like it when your favourite bands do, I didn't love it when I watched Pussifer, Maynard James Keenan's band, and they brought a wrestling ring. I thought it would be really cool because it's like a big show and a spectacle, and like, I know he's really into it and it looked really like good, and I was like, it on the face of it, it was cool, but then it was like a really weird fragmented gig where they'd play some songs and then they'd like stop and there'd be a wrestling match and then they'd play some more, and it was just, I didn't think it worked particularly well. I didn't love that, even though I like the music. Obviously, it's their choice, but you know, yeah. I'm just one person.
Yeah, there's a lot of what Maynard's bands do seems to be very just arbitrary. Just throw this in for the sake of it.
Yeah, I think he's just really into it, and he's into like creating a sort of dramatic / creative environment. And for him, that's probably a way of artistic expression and bringing another kind of energy to a live show. So I appreciate when people do different things, and I like to see them do different things. I just didn't love it.
So is this when they played the Roundhouse?
Yeah.
So I remember that night. So they were playing the Roundhouse in Camden down the road.
Was it Heat?
No, it was... No, Jucifer were playing.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
So I actually messaged Johannes Adonis from Lucifer, saying, come on, you've got to make this a triple. Like, you have to put a bill on that, on playing London the same night. So Jucifer, Lucifer and Pussifer all playing London on the same night.
I remember that, yeah.
Sadly, it didn't happen, but Jucifer and Pussifer were there, like literally yards away from each other.
It pleased you so much. I remember when you brought that up at the time, and you brought it up like several times. It really appeals to your language.
Yeah, of basic rhymes.
Rhymes. We all like a good rhyme, though, don't we? Yeah. Chris Haylock says, here's one for you, Jonathan. Yeah. Falling in Reverse, The Drug in Me is Reimagined. Discuss. So I should probably say, if you don't know Falling in Reverse, they had a song called The Drug in Me 10 years ago. And it was Falling in Reverse came out. Ronnie Radke was like a very polarizing figure in rock and metal. I think Hammer ended up covering Falling in Reverse like one time, but that was a bit of a backlash. And yeah, the drug in me was kind of this video where it was a song and a video where he was in prison and there were lots of like sexy girls in it. And Ronnie has actually...
Which always happens in prison.
And you just show up and you're just like, oh, there's a police officer and she appears to be bursting out of her uniform. What's happening there? But he actually had, he served a prison sentence in his early 20s. So I'm guessing that video was a reference to that. He used to write a lot of songs about how he was kind of misunderstood and stuff in his life and all that. So anyway, he did the drug in me.
Misunderstood by his fans.
He did the drug in me way back when. And now he's done a reimagined version, which is very different. It's slowed down. It's a ballad. He's doing it on a piano in the snow and then some flames burst out at the end. So it's basically sort of slowed down, balladized. I'm making that into a word. Very, very different. Jonathan, your thoughts?
Well, let's just say that the ballad version doesn't bring out any hidden depths.
The problem is, though, I feel like it's trying to bring out hidden depths.
Yeah, it's just...
But it's very earnest, so, isn't
again,
it?
It's just... It's another thing of just like... People just wanting their cake and eat it. Of just, you know, like the original song was so smarmy and just so no, no, no in your face. And then you want you the other side of it to make, oh yeah, but it's really meaningful. And to do this kind of ballad where he doesn't really express much in the way of vulnerability. It's just, it's still kind of, there's a kind of bombast there. And, you know, his voice is okay. There's some strings. It's in the snow. There's not much dynamics in the song yet, because there was the original songs, they're like basically hardly any dynamics whatsoever. It's just him
no
in your face. It's like that bit in Dumb and Dumber where he just wants to, do you want to hear a really annoying sound? That's
and he was sort of a provocative figure, and he just kind of came along and like was just like, I'm Ronnie Radke, I'm in your face, I'm in Falling in Reverse, here are some songs. And you know that, and then this is like a very different tone, but it's still the same person.
Yeah, it just always seems to come to kind of, to me, to come across as a bit of a narcissist. He's on that narcissist spectrum.
Yes.
And this is just another kind of example of that, of like trying to do this to say, no, you see, it is meaningful by just making it a kind of like a ballad without many dynamics. You'll just have it, you'll have, again, like the original song. And it's just, it's all
sound. All the right elements are there, but it doesn't have anything in it. Well, it's empty calories.
Yeah, it doesn't like it doesn't have a moment of kind of vulnerability, you know, a moment of vulnerability in it. There's not, like I said, the song doesn't really have any kind of highs and lows.
It's definitely the kind of thing where if I was in my early teens, I would sit watching the rain out the window and thinking that it was like really meaningful or something.
Yeah.
But as an adult, it does not come across like that.
No, it's just like, I find this with all these metalcore bands, or you know, some of the bands that they inspired, and where they kind of mix these clean and harsh vocals. Like, I mean, this has done it in two versions of the same song. Well, you know, they're not really harsh vocals, but again, it's that kind of like that complete sort of bipolar thing. It's like if you ever met a man or a man child, you know, who went from self pity to rage every few minutes, you wouldn't go anywhere near him. But this is what every metalcore song seems to be posited on. You just think, what the fuck is up with this guy? And just every metalcore song seems to be posited on that same kind of weird, like, switch on a dime.
Yeah.
Sort of, you know, but it's self-pity and it's anger, usually at some kind of woman or something.
It's often at some kind of woman, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like, why is that attractive to you? I do not understand. Like, would you ever go anywhere near anyone who acts like this in real life?
Well, it just comes across as childish.
Yeah, and just...
But
and,
there
and,
are
and,
people...
And just writing things
there are
to
people
a formula
like that in real life, sadly.
Oh, God. Well, you'd be like, what is with this guy?
I'm glad you're not like that, Jonathan.
Me? I'll never be like that. How dare you say I wouldn't be like that?
So changeable.
Oh, temperamental.
So changeable. Don't put any singles out anytime soon. We've got one more question.
Yeah. Chris Lloyd asks for our views on Poppy.
Yeah. Well, my view is that I really wanted to like Poppy because I like her image. She likes and hangs around with a lot of bands from our world.
Such as?
Oh, I can't remember now. She's been... Well, she's been announced for the tour with a big tour. I'm not going to say the bands yet because I want to check before I actually just blurt out what bands they are. Fill the time, Jonathan.
Well, I was actually blissfully unaware of Poppy until this
question
came up.
Deftones and Gojira. I thought it was that bill, but what? I didn't want to say. Yeah, so she's touring with them. I'm sure she's toured with other metal bands, and she's been, you know, she's posted pictures of herself backstage at shows. She's been part of
is she like a social influencer?
NXT Takeover. She has, you know, she's got a picture with Triple H here on Twitter. She's been around for a while, and I like her aesthetic. She sort of, you know, looks edgy, slightly kind of goth slash fetish. I like the aesthetic of it. And so I was excited to listen to her. And I really, really wanted to love it, like, really badly. Like, I was basically like, I already love Poppy, and that's fine. But I just don't click with it. To me, it just feels a little bit substanceless. And I would say that she's got kind of the extreme breakdowns, and they just remind me of Baby Metal, but I really love Baby Metal.
Yeah, that first, so thing, the first thing on the new album
I
is
sort of just would listen to Baby Metal instead of Poppy. But I still want to really like her. So I am wondering if seeing her live and like seeing her on a metal bill, not that I'm probably going to go to the States to see that Gojira and Deftones tour, even though I'd fucking love to. I wonder if seeing her would change my opinion. But at the moment, I just really want to like her and don't really like the music.
Appropriately. So I remember when I was a kid, I used to watch the Kenny Everett show. And one of my favourite ever sketches on it was this animation called When Bambi Met Godzilla.
Right. This is such an obscure Jonathan reference, and I'm here for it.
Kenny Everett. Is Kenny Everett obscure? I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen... I know he's a comedian from the old days, but I don't think I've ever seen any sketches by him.
Please
tell us more, Jonathan.
So the opening credits, la 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 la, there's Bambi just, just chewing and everything's like idyllic. And then the end credits finish, opening credits finish, and just this huge Godzilla foot just goes boom right on Bambi, and that's it. That's the sketch. But when you're back... when Bambi meets Godzilla.
This was back in the days where people had like three television channels and nothing else to do. But
how else do you think it was going to go?
I didn't know where you were going. You're going down your own path.
which I thought when you're about 8 or 9 is really funny.
So what?
That's going to be Poppy supporting Gojira.
So what? Hang on. Was it a man dressed as a gorilla falling?
No, it was animation.
Right, okay, sorry. Animation. I think you did say that, I was just... Yeah. I'm struggling to take this in, you know? It's a difficult thing.
Always take the scenic route. So I was blissfully unaware of Poppy until today, and I sort of started listening. And I saw... what's the name of her new album?
Listen to it. I'm just going to have to Google it.
So the cover, you know, the cover obviously is going to set me off straight away because it's, you know, she's got like these superimposed spikes around her neck.
Black metal corpse paint.
Yeah, but it's not even on her face. It's obviously superimposed on her face.
Yes, but that's okay. That's an artistic decision.
Yeah, I was thinking, okay, well, here's someone else, you know, probably appropriating black metal without trying to get a little bit of fruition without actually having any investment in it whatsoever, but that's okay.
I want to like it so much.
So then I went into listen to the first song. It's like, oh my God, this is like the worst kind of baby metal ripoff I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And it's just like, it's all over the place. It's just like, okay, nothing can be this bad without a reason for it. And I went through a few more songs. I thought, okay, well, I'm gonna check on the iTunes thing. And it's, anything biographical detail. She's like, oh, she's a performance artist. It's like, okay. She would do things like, she just put up videos that were reading a Bible for an hour. Just like, oh my God. And just like, so she's kind of like the, she's like the Ivanka Trump of kind of pop or avant pop. Like, she does things because, you know, not really any knowledge of what it's supposed to do, but she's, this is what performance artists do. They just read a Bible on stage. If you ask her what it meant, or she probably had no idea why she was doing it, just thought, well, this is what...
She's got a graphic novel coming out as well, Damnation, Poppy's Inferno. So there's a lot of like style over substance going on, isn't there? Sort of elaborate costumes, elaborate makeup, graphic novel.
Either what point she's trying to make, what she's really trying to, what she's trying to deconstruct. And on top of which, her voice is just nothing.
Yeah, not a lot of substance, is there?
Substanceless, like not even a breeze, like a kind of a wisp of a voice. There's not even like meant. I don't know. Just the voice is just absolutely nothing, and yeah, it just seems to have this kind of sense of, well, this is what performance artists do. This kind of sense of entitlement, not even engage with anything. Just I just don't see the point, and.
So we're both kind of saying style over substance, really, is what we're saying.
Someone told me today that if I listened to her more, maybe I get into it. But
that's what I really want to like it. Like I said, I just want to like it so badly.
I think it's also now for me, it's like an art project to how much I can hate Poppy.
Mm.
That's my art project.
Interesting. Well, let's see.
Oh, not even that. Okay. So now I know what she is. This realm of awareness has been opened up, and just like I'm just gonna let it pass. And I don't actually hate Poppy, but I just don't see the point of it whatsoever.
Well, I'm willing to have my mind changed. I really want to have my mind changed, and I hope my mind changes. But I'm sure she doesn't give a shit about what we think anyway, because she's doing really well.
Yeah,
so
it's
fine.
It's just like, you know, a lot of people. There's been a lot of people. Say, oh yeah, but a lot of people think, oh, that's what metal is. I was just like, no, it's not. I just remember, like.
So for you, it's like a collection of symbols that people might see and go, "That's metal," but it's not.
Yeah, without any of awareness of where those kind of symbols come from, what they're supposed to represent. And I remember, like, after the, Lordi won the Eurovision Song Contest, and all my brother's friends, he's a bit older than me, like, "Oh, you write for me? You write for Metal Magazine?" Yeah. So it's stuff like Lordi. It's like, no, it's not.
Oh, you're gatekeeping, Jonathan. You're being a metal gatekeeper.
Well, just dig it. I'm a gatekeeper. Just dig a bit deeper into the graves. Just polish the graves. You know, polish the gates. Go inside, dig the graves up. Get your hands dirty.
Right, that's it then. Let's see if she gets her hands dirty. Let's see if she digs those graves.
Yeah.
And let's see if we change our minds.
Yeah, but thanks, Chris Lowe, because I'd have happily gone through at least a few more months of my life without having been aware of Poppy. So thank you for that.
Well, let's see. Let's see what happens, shall we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that we've come to the end of it now. You're going to do something very interesting this weekend, though, aren't you?
Yeah, I've got two festivals back to back. I'm off to York tomorrow for the Jorvik takeover, which is a big Viking festival. So very on.
Well, Alice is going too. One of you guys, I'm sure, will be on the podcast to talk about it.
Yep. Highland are playing again with Galsverd and Winterfilith. A few Vordruna wannabes who shall not be named. Then coming back for Cataleptic Rites at the Dome. I think it's at the Dome. It was Electric Ballroom. I think it's at, and there's an amazing lineup of bands on Friday and Saturday. Svarti Dalvi and Miss Thurming, two of the best Icelandic black metal bands on the Friday. Vemod, one of the most majestic of black metal bands I've ever come across. And kind of very cosmic, they're headlining, along with Wolvernest, who are a very special band with an organ, with theremin, I think, and Alan from Primordial's doom band Dread Sovereign. So it's going to be a really great weekend at Cataleptic Rites. I think it's at the Electric Ballroom.
Cool. Well, I'm going to go and listen to Poppy until I like it. So
I am.
That's what I'm going
to do. You're a masochist. You don't have to like it.
But I want to.
Why?
Don't know, I just do. It's everything that I like, except I don't like it right now.
Yeah, everything I hate, trying to sort of toy with everything that I like.
These tangled webs we weave in our minds. We will see you next week.
And I'll see you at some other point.
Some undetermined time within the sphere of our lives.
Yes, just materialize one day.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye.